A group in London concerned about injustices in Libya are also taking matters into their own hands. The group calls itself Topple the Tyrants, and it's occupied a $16 million mansion in North London that's said to belong to Muammar Gaddafi's son, Saif. The British government froze assets owned by Gaddafi and his family last week, but members of Topple the Tyrants say they don't trust the British government to do the job right. They're vowing to stay in the house until the property's assets are returned to the Libyan people. The group claims a house is managed for Gaddafi's son by a holding company registered in the British Virgin Islands. It says that's a common strategy for the world's tyrants, using front companies in offshore locations to avoid paying taxes and protect their anonymity. Whichever way the Gaddafis have invested any ill-gotten gains, they are likely pondering how to hold onto it all should Gaddafi be forced to step down or flee. Daniel Telesklav runs the International Center for Asset Recovery in Basel, Switzerland. He says these days dictators don't just park money offshore.
There are a lot of investment opportunities in the countries concerned. These countries have got economies that are growing very fast, so why invest it offshore if you can have a much higher return onshore where you can also control the investment? So I think a large percentage today remains in the country. Then there is always a portion that goes offshore. And here we have certainly seen more and more banking centers that are emerging. 20 years ago, we wouldn't probably have the necessary facilities in the Gulf countries, in Asia or in Africa. But of course, we still have the traditional offshore financial centers, the US, the UK, Switzerland, and a few smaller islands.
How do you track these funds down? I mean, literally, how do you follow the money?
Well, we benefit a little bit from the increased transparency in the banking sector. A lot has been done in the last 20 years when it comes to identifying customers, obliging banks to know more about the origin of funds. On the other hand, the corrupt politicians have got the best lawyers and accountants and financial advisors that would help them concealing the true origin of the assets.
Can you give us an example of a case in which assets were recovered and went back to the citizens of a country, kind of a perfect recovery scenario?
One example is the former Nigerian strongman, Sani Abacha, where alone in Switzerland, over $700 million have been confiscated, have been returned to the country. So that's one of the rare success stories. However, there are still many examples where it didn't work. There is an example of a country where the president has changed the location of the capital. And before making this information public, he has discussed this case among his family members. So the family members had the opportunity to buy properties at the new location of the capital, and when this became public, the president instructed all ministries to buy property to build new government buildings. And of course, for a price that was way beyond the price that the family members bought when they purchased the property 4 weeks ago. So these are forms of corruption today that do exist on a daily basis and very, very difficult to trace down.
And what country, what head of state is that?
That was an Asian country. I can't, unfortunately, name the country because the investigation has not led to anything.
I see. Okay.
Yet.
You know, with a lot of these heads of state, they have a very patriarchal view of the world, and they probably believe that the money they take truly belongs to them. So legally, how tough is the case to make that money doesn't belong to them?
It's actually quite obvious, isn't it? A president has an income of roughly, $4,000 to $8,000 a month in an African country. So whenever he has got wealth that is much higher, one must have a very good reason for that. So if somebody runs around with that enormous amount of wealth, we must have the necessary safeguards to say that we don't do business with them. That's already largely developed in the banking sector, but unfortunately we don't have the same requirements for governments. I mean, it's quite frustrating to see how many ministers of economy were actually traveling to Egypt, to Tunisia, and to Libya to do business with the same people that are now being accused of being mass murderers.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, rampant corruption is partly what drove anger so high in the Middle East and North Africa and turned people out in the streets of Tunisia and Egypt and now in Libya. Do you think the international community is being tough enough on this corruption while it's happening?
Not yet, but certainly tougher than 10 years ago. We also have more international legal tools to fight corruption, but we're still in the early days of doing it seriously, and it will be very interesting to see whether it will be possible to trace down the assets related to Mubarak and the other dictators and return them.
Daniel Telesklav is co-executive director of the Basel Institute on Governance in Switzerland. Thank you very much for your time indeed.
Thank you.